in the dark, I fed my dream. Purple gorgeous flows like sweet springs. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Creating the world like it's meant to be. I'm a gorgeous P.I.M.P. I'm the king. Black and love in everything. Bring a change, making it last.
Welcome to episode 232 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Oh, yeah. I want to thank everybody for coming in tonight. Well, very, very rainy day here in Western North Carolina, but it's good to be with y'all. And this episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twoldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Living Soil Foundation. I got some news about that coming up here soon, but I'm not going to mess around. I'm going to jump right into it. Want to thank everybody in the chat tonight. Want to give a special shout out, as always, to Renewed Homestead for handling the chat. Remember, don't start no SH and there won't be no IT. You know how we roll around here. So, everybody, it is a rainy, Eddie Rabbit was crazy, man. I don't love nothing about a rainy night. Yeah, son, that was before your time. You probably don't understand what I'm saying right there. But anyway, I would rather work in the rain than being in the house doing what I did today. So, it is what it is. But anyway, I'll just jump right into the farm news. Want to thank everybody for coming in. If you would, hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody we're live. We're probably going to have some really good information tonight, as we always do, I hope. But anyway, it was raining outside today, so I'm like, okay, I still haven't even dealt with all of these doggone tomatoes that we pulled in from last year. They were in the freezer, which, by the way, instead of blanching them, I didn't know about this method, but Michelle did, and I'm sure a number of you out there do as well. I've only ever blanched them before. I'd get them, blanch them, you know, and then, you know, make sauce out of them, that kind of stuff. But if you freeze them, the skin comes off, I think, so much easier. So, yeah, ladies, why hasn't anybody ever told me about this method before? So I was doing that today. I did it the other day, and now I'm doing another batch, and then I still have another batch left. So before it's all said and done, I'm thinking I'm going to have close to probably 10 gallons of sauce before it's all said and done. And that, between that and salsa, folks, you have no idea how much salsa I can go through if given the opportunity. And of course, when William and them come out, of course, we got to send them away with some of this sauce, because it's better than anything you can buy in the store. And by the way, y'all, for one of the little tips out there, if you're using, pretty cool doing it this time of year, especially, well, in late summer when, you know, the tomatoes are really kicking, mid and late summer, because all the other things that are going to be ripe with it, all the things that I put in that sauce are also going to be kicking. You know, your basil's going to be ready to rock and roll, your peppers. Of course, we will have already had some onions put back. All the stuff that I'm going to put in that sauce, everything except for the wine, can literally come from your homes. Yeah, yes, I said wine, folks. That's right. You can't properly. I learned this little trick from Alton Brown years ago. Remember when Food Network actually had shows that taught you something? Remember those? Remember Alton Brown, son? You used to watch him when you were little.
Yeah, I love Good Eats.
Yeah, Alton Brown. I used to learn so much back when the History Channel actually talked about history, albeit wrong history, but it was at least, it was about history. There is no programming. I don't know what's on TV these days because I don't have one or don't watch it anyway. But anyway, there was that show Good Eats. And I remember years ago, my mother-in-law was the one that taught me how to can. And I remember years later, I was like, man, it just felt like something. I mean, it was great. There were good tomatoes and all that stuff, but something felt missing. And then I remember watching Good Eats with Alton Brown and him saying, look, folks, some people may be averse to this, but I'm telling you right now, you cannot make proper tomato sauce unless you use wine, because the alcohol in the wine brings out a flavor in the tomatoes that you can't otherwise get. And so I was like, okay, let me give it a shot. Because, you know, I was still pretty new at cooking with wine and stuff like that. So I did it. And next thing you know, man, there was a period where everything, I was cooking wine in everything. You name it. I mean, I cooked entire ecosystems in wine, y'all. I ain't kidding you. But I'm telling you, if you really want to bring out the flavor in those tomatoes, man, that is absolutely a key. It certainly doesn't hurt to have, you know, fresh basil on hand and all the other stuff out there. So, yeah, that's one of those little tricks I learned from Food Network and all the other cool things I learned from Food Network back when they showed people how to cook. Now, I remember being in a hotel, and the only thing I can even bear to watch that's on mainstream TV is Food Network. To a point, I mean, even there, they had some weird stuff going on. But anyway, I put it on there, and it's all like game shows and stuff like that. Like, where's all the instruction? What? So I don't even know what's going on out there. So it's all History Channel. I don't know what they have on there, but yeah. Well, okay, I'll take that back. Ancient Aliens, they had that on, so I ended up watching that because Food Network was about some grocery store games or whatever, some competitions. I don't know how I got to talking about that, but folks, y'all, go get some wine. In fact, we used to live, when we lived in Kansas, son, we lived down the street from that winery. And
Holyfield Winery. Holyfield Winery.
Holyfield Winery, and their tailgate red is what I would always, I'd buy that stuff by the case, y'all, because when tomato season rolled around, believe me, I was going through wine like you would not believe, just putting it in that sauce. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know what this reminds me of, Dad? Was that home ec class that I was taking in, was it like my freshman or sophomore year? Man, this lady, she would ruin every recipe I tried to make. I remember I tried to make cannolis one time, and she couldn't find cannoli shells, so she brought me, what was it, like manicotti shells or something like that? And like, you would fail that lesson if you didn't at least try everything everybody made, as long as you didn't have some like debilitating allergy or something. But so we were all just suffering through those like manicotti cannolis. I was mad. I was so mad. I was making, what was it? Alfredo. And she got me margarine. I even specified in, like, as part of the grade was like how well you could write your grocery list and everything. And she gave me, I specified, I need real butter or else this is going to be greasy. And yeah, she gave me margarine. Well, one time I'm making risotto. And I tell Dad, I'm like, man, she's going to mess this up. She's going to get me minute rice. She's going to get all the wrong stuff. She did get me minute rice. She was supposed to give me cooking wine because it's just salted and stuff. But she wouldn't. She wasn't going to do that. And so Dad sent me to school with a thermos of wine to deglaze the pan with. And this lady was not, she was not fit to cook this class based on this description alone. I deglaze that pan with that rice and the onions in it. I deglaze it with the wine. And she just comes over and she's like, that smells really good. And I'm like, this is a very recognizable sound or smell. If you've ever smelled wine deglazing a pan, you should recognize that I just brought wine to school. I got away with it. Nobody even asked.
No, man. I mean, the crazy, I could tell you some stories about our home ec class. I remember trying to make pizzas out of biscuit dough. Like those packaged biscuits and stuff. Yeah, folks. I mean, we raised a food snob. I mean, I remember when your mom, she got the biggest kick out of this when, and I bet she still has the paper somewhere, where all the kids would put down, like, you were in first or second grade or something like that. And all the kids would put down their favorite food. Every single kid put down pizza or hamburgers or hot dogs or something like that. My son is the only one that put down on there lobster.
It's your fault.
His favorite food. She's like, look at, yeah, we raised something of a food snob. Yeah, so he's the only kid out there to put down a lobster. Well, you're also the only kid I ever heard of writing Santa asking for a butler because you didn't want to clean your room. So
that's from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That's where that came from.
Yeah, we had some jacked up home ec teachers too, but yeah, that one there, I remember thinking, okay, am I prepared for the fallout? Because to make proper risotto, you got to have arborio rice, you got to have wine, you got to have Parmesan. And I sent you to school. I was like, there is no way my son's going to go here and screw up some risotto. No way, no how. So I sent him there with my ingredients. And he's like, what are we going to do about this wine? I'm like, I don't even care, man. Just go ahead and bring this wine. And so,
the fact that she didn't even notice. She couldn't even tell that I deglazed. The whole room was, the hallway was smelling like deglazed, like wine. She didn't
even notice. It just said it smelled good. Yeah, this is what real food tastes like. Man, so we went out on a rabbit trail on that one, but I'll bring us back. So, yeah, that's awesome memories. So, yeah, baby sheep's bouncing. And, yes, I mean bouncing all over the place, folks. When they're little, they crack you up because, you know, a couple of days into it, when they finally kind of get their legs out from under them, they don't walk. They bounce. They hop everywhere like Tigger. And it's the cutest little thing when you're seeing them running, you know, going through the pasture. So we got baby sheep bouncing around everywhere. I wish my grandbaby was here to see it. Maybe they'll still be bouncing when she's here. Got that going on. I told you about processing the tomatoes. Okay, yesterday, good news. This is for the Living Soil Foundation. So we got the engineers to come back out, and they came out earlier than we expected. So they came out yesterday, and we met them on the site. So we already did the scalar testing. It came back clean. And now the engineers came out. They did one better. So they not only tested, we already know the water at this river's messed up. So they got soil samples, they got water samples. And then they got one at a control site, which is, I don't know, maybe 2 football fields away from this one, downstream. And so they're going to test that. And then also we went upstream closer to where, because I haven't even read the article yet, but judging by the front page of one of the local papers around here, it seems as if they're claiming that the river is just ready for business. Well, we're about to find out whether or not it is. I've already seen people float in this river, and they got to be out of their minds. But I'm not going to officially say it until we get the results back, and then I'm going to go right to wherever this paper's made, and I'm going to slap it right on their desk and say, account for this. Homestead Twins in the his house. Yeah, what's up? So, yeah, I can't wait to hang out with those guys again. But anyway, yeah, we're hoping that, you know, we got, what did they say? Wednesday is 2 weeks from Wednesday is when we expect some results back. And when we get them, we'll do a show like we did the last time, and we're going to talk about the results and what we've gotten out of it, and hopefully try to convey to everybody out there exactly how we did it. Because mainstream science is going to tell you that what we did, if we've crossed the finish line, officially, they're going to tell you that it can't be done, number one, and they're going to tell you that it definitely can't be done in under 6 months. So if we cross the finish line, that's exactly why we brought in the engineers to do the proper soil testing. You know, I could go out here and get some testing myself, but no, this is why these tests cost $10,000 when you got to bring in, you know, soil scientists or soil engineers from elsewhere to try to get some reliable results. So, yeah. Nobody's going to be able to poo-poo these results, and they weren't able to do it the last time. So anyway, that's going on today. And other little news out here, folks. Hey, if anybody has been trying to email me and I haven't responded, they appear to be back. When I say they, I don't know who they is, but they seem to be messing with the email again. I have Dr. Laura Sanger, almost missed her because I had to set this interview up about 6 months ago. If you don't know about it, you're definitely going to want to hear this next one. That's going to be on Wednesday, probably going to be 1 o'clock Eastern. She lives mountain time, and you know, she's got a whole life and everything. So we can't do it at the typical time, but anyway, she's going to be on, and folks, you're definitely going to want to hear what she has to say. And strangely enough, it's going to tie in with a conversation that I had today with Ariana Masters. Folks, I had Ariana on the show before, and she has been absolutely blowing up the internet with the stuff she's been dropping lately. Some of it, well, the latest of which you can find on my X account. I linked it today, and you can find that at Permapastures on X. And folks, if you watch this, anybody who is a skeptic regarding weather modification and things that are going on right now, if you watch this video and you still believe that they aren't controlling the weather, you need to be wrapped in the head with a tack hammer, okay? I'm just going to tell you straight up. She's showing that how they're using these NEXRAD radar. I mean, it's unimpeachable at this point. And she's doing it. She put it out. I don't know what platform. Well, she ended up putting it on X. And X, of course, is suppressing her like they are me and anybody else who's asking critical questions about things. But if you can watch this video that I posted on X and still think, it's just jet contrails and stuff like that. If that's what you still think, like I said, you are a moron on legs. I'm just going to say it right out. If you can watch this and see it with their own towers, and of course she has special access and she's not in at liberty to tell you how or, you know, what, but if you can watch this video and see these anomalies that defy all laws of physics, I don't know what, there is no hope for you. Okay. There just flat out is no hope for you. Unimpeachable. So go over there on X. You can go check it out or go subscribe to her as well, because she's on every platform. At least on Instagram and stuff like that. Her name is Ariana Masters. And if you can watch this, folks, I don't know what to tell you at this point. And going as fortuitous as it is, I just happen to have Dr. Laura Singer talking about something similar to this that's coming up on Wednesday, based on what Ariana was just telling me. So I called her up. When I saw this video, I had to call her up and say, whoa. I know her. She's a friend of mine. And I call her up and she's dropping, son. She is dropping all kinds of tactical nukes to me and your mom as we were talking to her and about what's going on in Western North Carolina. Now, this applies to you as well and maybe a number of the people in the audience. So I'm asking her certain things about what's going on where. And she says, look, the hottest places in this country where they are absolutely, you are in a microwave oven, is Western North Carolina. And of course, parts of Tennessee as well, that, you know, Eastern Tennessee, Western North Carolina, and all of Texas is exactly what she told me. She said, you are being, and then she asked, she says, okay, I'm going to rattle off a list of symptoms here and tell me if you guys have any of them. About half of them that she listed off there are all the things your mom and I have been feeling around here. And I'll bet a dollar to donuts. And in fact, if you look up in the clouds, I put that on X the other day. When you see those wavy forms in those clouds up there, folks, that's not natural. That's coming from the NEXRAD radar towers and the other towers that they're using to do all this stuff. And she said, I got to get her back on the show, but in a nutshell, I'll just try to convey it real quick. She says, when this happened before, when the wildfires happened in North Carolina, she said, I saw this phenomenon before. But she says, for the last 6 weeks, it has basically been parked over Western North Carolina and has not moved. And she's talking about this list of symptoms, and me and your mom both have been dealing with them. Like me getting up every single night, 2 o'clock in the morning, and just not making any sense at all. And this is, and she, I didn't tell her this. She asked me this. She said, you've been waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning. Yeah. And then of course there's another X channel called Into Thin Air, in the number 2 and then Thin Air, talking about the very same stuff. So I was like, you gotta be kidding me. She's like, the hottest places right now, nonstop being cooked, fried and baked, Western North Carolina, Eastern Tennessee, and all of Texas. How's it going out there, son?
It's the same thing. Like I said before, June, my daughter, she loves being outside. Like during the Midwest Preparedness Conference, we've been joking that after that conference where we camped the whole time for like a week, she's just been straight feral ever since. She just like loves being outside. She just takes off like, I can see over there. Why can't I go over there? She doesn't understand property lines or anything like that. But the other day, it was in the morning. It was still, I would say, before 10 a.m. Her and my wife were outside. My wife's doing 75 hard. She was doing a workout and everything. She brought the baby with her. And, like, the baby was getting angry being outside. And it was nasty out. It was like this. It wasn't, they were saying clear skies on the weather app, but it was not clear at all. Like, it was a solid haze above us. If I looked out horizontally, I could see clearly. Like, there's a house I can use as a reference point. And I can see perfectly fine. But if you looked up, it was like there was this layer of haze right above us. And it feels like you're literally being like microwaved from the inside. That's what it feels like outside. Now, right now, it feels perfectly fine. The humidity's low. The dew point's low. It did just like rain a lot last night. So I wonder if that has something to do with it. But leading up to the rain, it feels like the same thing every single time, like you're being microwaved outside. Now, this past week, I was up in Colorado doing a consultation outside of Colorado Springs, and the whole way back, I was like skirting around storms, basically. Like through Colorado, there was one storm that was running parallel with me, going through Kansas, pretty unscathed through Kansas. But then once I hit Oklahoma, which Oklahoma's still going through it, it was like all the clouds that I saw in Oklahoma all had that wavy pattern underneath. Same thing in Texas. Right before storms, you'll notice that all these clouds out here have that same wavy pattern, almost like if you're looking at skiing moguls. That's what it looks like yeah. moguls. You see that every single time before like a heavy rain event or like heavy threats of tornadoes. Now, another odd phenomena that's been going on is that this whole spring has been pretty high on tornadoes. But this part specifically, DeKalb, Texas, has not been getting much rain at all. Like all of the rain has been going around specifically DeKalb, Texas. Like parts around us, if you go north a little bit, it'll be rainy. If you go south a little bit, it's rainy. If you go east or west of us, it's rainy. But specifically right here, we're missing the majority of the storms. And in fact, this past week, I remember before I went to Colorado, they spent like 5 or 6 days predicting heavy rainfall for DeKalb, and nothing happened. We got maybe accumulatively a quarter of an inch of rain. And but everybody around us got completely drenched in rain. So that doesn't make any sense. It's like none of the weather makes sense. You can't even, like, you're better off just looking up in the sky and determining whether or not it's going to rain than looking at your weather app to figure out if it's going to rain. And usually it's wrong. Like, there have been times where it said it's sunny outside. I look outside and you can't even see the sun. There have been times where it's saying it's raining outside. I go outside and it's like there's no rain at all. Or times where it's saying like it's just overcast and it's freaking downpouring outside. Doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, it gets even better. It's funny you mentioned that whole, and I'm just going to, I'll mention this and then I'll move on. But Eric Seider, right before, I talked to Dame Wigington pretty often. And, you know, we're friends. And Eric was telling me, he's like, dude, now he's out in California. He says, man, I can't even go outside, dude. It feels like I'm being cooked. Now, keep in mind, folks, Eric has worked in the hottest places on this planet. We're talking at the Jordan Desert. I mean, yeah. We're talking in the middle of Jordan, for crying out loud. The man knows what heat feels like. I mean, he's worked in Texas. I mean, you name it, the guy's worked.
Every type of heat. Yes. Like Jordan, where it's a dry heat. Vietnam, where it's a muggy, wet heat. East Texas, where it's freaking miserable. Everywhere. Yes.
So Eric has worked all over this planet doing permaculture work. And he says, dude, I can't even go outside. And then it wasn't a day later. I'm talking to Dane, or I can't remember whether I said it, whether I'm talking to Dane or whether he said it I can't remember which, but anyway, Dane had said that now what they're doing, if you can look up at the sun and you see like what looks like a rainbow around it, it's creating a lensing effect. It's one of the sprays that they're putting up there that it creates a lensing effect. So let's say the UV is up to 11. Well, it may actually be up to 15 or 20 when they do the lensing effect. That's why when you go outside, that's when my grandbaby's outside and she's probably complaining. Or when Eric goes out, or when they combine this with the NEXRAD radar towers, folks, I spent so much time talking about this because really, I'm a farmer and I've said this before, so I'm kind of going to need a planet, you know, and all of us are. Michigan, oh my goodness, man, you guys up there are getting blasted with chemtrails every single day. And I mean, as far as getting cooked, apparently the hottest spots in this country right now. Oh, and here's another little thing she said, and then I'll move on. So I asked her, I said, so, you know, when you bring this up, the first thing out of most people's mouths is, well, it's happening everywhere. She says, no, it's not. She says, let me tell you where it's happening. This is a woman that has access to all the data. It's happening worse in North America. Well, in the United States, number two is Canada. Number three, that for all of our Canadian listeners up there, number three happens to be Western Europe. And then there's little pieces of Russia that get it. very small pieces of China that get it. And check this out. Anywhere, just like I said before, anywhere south of Texas, untouched by chemtrails, except for the areas of Mexico that are that obviously border Texas. So from the middle of Mexico and then all the way down to the very bottom of South America, then there's a little bit down there. But all through Central America and all through South America. So what? You're telling me planes don't fly around there? And you got that polecat RFK Jr. coming out the other day on Dr. Phil when somebody called him out on that show saying, well, I think it's in the jet fuel. Dane Wigington told me 2 months before RFK Jr. and the other polecat started and Alex Jones and all the other suckers out there saying, Dane told me 2 months before they started saying, he says, watch, they're going to start saying it's in jet fuel, even though we had the evidence of the nozzles on the plane doing it. Dane told me 2 months before they started doing that. And then all of a sudden, RFK Jr. and Dane Wigington spoke to him directly, told him, not just told him, showed him, look, hey, there are nozzles on the side of these planes. It is not in the fuel. In fact, you would gum up the entire system. We've talked to every mechanic out there that works on this. If you were to put it in the fuel, it would destroy these engines. They would not even be able to fly. So, folks, if they're telling you that garbage, don't believe it. It's look, I'm just telling you this because go back, check out the Deagle report. And I'm about to do that work. I'm going to find it out. I'm going to have to make the time and look into it. But I said before, the Deagle report, look, go look it up. Go find it out. Go ask ChatGPT what it is, D-E-A-G-E-L. Find out what that Deagle report was and find out where they're heavily chemtrailing the most. And I bet dollars to donuts that all of the countries that they listed in there with population collapses are the same countries that are being chemtrailed. Never heard anybody else say that. But like I said, that's my hypothesis, and I'm gonna look into it. All right. So on to more good news. So today is Memorial Day. And I said that tongue in cheek because as a Army veteran, my wife and I, when people call me up and on Veterans Day and Memorial Day, people always want to reach out. And honestly, it's a day I hate to even answer my phone. I don't. I try to avoid my phone. I'll be honest with you. Because when you know what I know, like King Solomon said, you know, with, you know, the wiser you become on certain things, the more sorrow you have. And I can say that that absolutely applies for me, especially when you go back, and I've talked about it a number of times. You read the book War is a Racket by General Smedley Butler, you know, only a general that won the Congressional Medal of Honor twice. There's only 9 people have ever done that in history. Okay. He's one of them. He would have been the only human being in history to win it a third time, but he turned it down. He wrote a book called War is a Racket. And I need to remember the beginning of that book because he explains why it's a racket, okay? I'm also brought into remembering, when I think of Memorial Day, I can't help but wonder, it's my view. Folks, you can believe whatever you want, but I if anybody wants to compare brain pans on history regarding what I'm about to say, we can have that debate anytime. I'll debate any human being on this planet. As far as saying, oh, they died for our freedom. Well, did they really? Because I think I can make a pretty convincing argument that we haven't fought a just war since maybe the Civil War. You might even say the Revolutionary War. Some people will say World War II. Well, that's because you don't know it. You haven't been taught the right stuff about World War II. You certainly haven't.
What happened before World War I and what agreements were made before World War I.
Thank you very much, son. Thank you very much. Look at the people like the Rhodes scholar, Cecil Rhodes, okay? Folks, if you want to know what really, okay, go back to World War I. Okay, I'll just pull this rabbit out of the hat off the top of my head. Look at Cecil Rhodes and what he did before World War I, okay? They had basically a group of Englishmen, and these were some diabolical SOBs, the Boer War. If you don't know what that is in South Africa, folks, you might want to look into it, okay? These were the people that orchestrated that. Untold, unbelievable carnage down there. The blacks and the whites got along just fine in South Africa until the English got involved. And of course, they created this balkanization. Anyway, that was the precursor to World War I. And a lot of people don't know that history. And so what they did, if you ever go to the World War I National Museum, which William has reluctantly been there more times than I can probably count, because I love going to museums. And when he was little, I would take him there all the time saying, hey, son, look around. Look at all these lies they got on the wall. because if you go there, the history they tell you doesn't make any sense. But when you examine the work of people like Anthony Sutton and a number of others, you realize that Smedley Butler was right, that all these wars are a racket. Anybody want to actually argue? Okay, I'll pick something that's less controversial, because yes, World War One was a complete racket. Okay, it really was. And then of course the Treaty of Versailles, which if you go and look at Brown Brothers Harriman and they, all the people involved with that, you realize that Allen Dulles and his brother John Foster Dulles, you know, the guy that they named the airport after in D.C. These people basically orchestrated this thing. They created the Treaty of Versailles and fixed it in such a way to where it ensured we will have World War II. Okay? War is a racket. Once again, Smedley Butler. Go read that book. Go check it out. I'm not going to say you'll be glad you did, but I said all that to say this. Think of, and I memorized this one a long time ago. Henry Kissinger, you know, he's highly regarded. I don't know why. The man was a complete scoundrel up one side and down the other. Unless he repented, y'all, he is burning right now. Henry Kissinger said, military men are big, stupid animals that should be used as tools for foreign policy. Yeah, people say, well,
you're a conspiracy theorist. You just remember stuff like that?
Yeah, it's called having a good memory. It's called memorizing stuff, because people say, well, where did you get it from? I got to memorize things because people, now you got no excuse. Everybody has a phone, okay? So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, big stupid animals that should be used as tools for foreign policy. He is quoted on that by Bob Woodward, okay? And Kissinger never argued the fact that he actually said that. So when you think about Memorial Day, yeah, I think about all these guys and gals that are in early graves, and then let's not forget about all the ones who are slowly dying or dying a protracted suicide because they can't pull themselves out of a jug or can't get themselves off of these painkillers. I worked at the VA hospital for 5 years, y'all. You would literally see guys walk out of that VA hospital holding a grocery bag full of, at the time, things like Oxycontin. They would go, the ones that were stuck in the domiciliary that was at the VA hospital in Leavenworth, there was a domiciliary out there. They would literally take that stuff and they would sling that dope out the back gates. And these were given to them by VA doctors and stuff like that, folks. These are the casualties they don't talk about. They talk about, yeah, 58,000 died in Vietnam. How many Vietnamese were murdered over a lie? You know,
Well, Dad, you know my buddy, the one that, you know, has come over a few times. Whenever he was served in Afghanistan, and he had, like, multiple TBIs. He had, like, multiple injuries that he suffered from just serving. And when he came back and was trying to get, you know, healing from that and stuff, they would give him a brown paper bag full of drugs. They would give him the bottle of painkillers that the pharmacist gets to split up into other prescriptions and stuff. They would give him that every single time they went to go see him. He that's what he would get. It wasn't anything like, oh, let's try to fix the problem. It was like, all right, let's try to just get rid of the pain and then watch you die slowly. So that way we don't have to pay your disability or your benefits or anything like that for very long. That's all it is.
That's exactly what it is. So when you want to honor me or anybody else, every other veteran out there, like former 31 Bravo here, MP. Of course, I can't say that without making a joke. You can't spell wimp without MP. Yeah, I had to do that, man. Sorry, bro, but thank you for putting that out there. But yeah, bro, I had to pick on you. Bottom line is, you want to honor veterans, you want to honor all these people out there, because like I said, you talk about the ones that died in theater, but you don't talk about all the ones that died of a slow suicide over here because they can't deal with the trauma that they saw over there. Things that are unspeakable, things that you can't unsee. You want to really honor, you know, forget about putting a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. You want to really honor troops? Don't put them in meat grinders that are, and, you know, here's another quote, all wars are bankers' wars. Yeah, that's how you can honor everybody on Memorial Day. Let's stop putting our guys and gals in harm's way. And then better still, shooting them up with a cocktail of stuff that who even knows what it is? I mean, you know, I can't even say it on here. They'll probably dust this channel once again. But the fact of it is, every single day, every deployment you go on, you walk through there, you get a battery of, and they don't even tell you what they're shooting you up with. You know, I mean, I thank God that William came out all right, because Michelle was deployed when we knew she was pregnant. So, I mean, folks, at the end of the day, you want to honor your veterans? Stop putting them in the meat grinders, and stop saying, I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. I bring up that polecat Kissinger, y'all, and I just lose it. I mean, all I think about right now are all of these people that I would love to absolutely put my hands on. All of these people, like the current, I mean, I there's so many people in this current administration I'd love to put my hands on. But honestly, I would love to go Old Testament on a number of folks out there, because they're the first ones to say, oh, we love our troops. And then they're the first ones to say, let's put them in the middle of a meat grinder so Wall Street can make even more money. Yeah. Like I said, here's a reading assignment. Go check out War is a Racket, or I'm sure there's an audio book of it. When you read that book, you're going to find out why General Smedley Butler, the guy, when I say he was an American hero, folks, of all the soldiers that ever existed, if I could have ever met one of them, he's it. I'm dead serious. He is number one at the top of the list. If you read that book, you'll find out that even all the way back, and like William said, long before World War I, they would send in our Marines to go in there and basically collect payment. That's exactly. We've been working as a thug empire for I don't know how long. And don't tell me we're not an empire. 900 military bases in 130 countries. Yeah, Rome wishes it had that. Babylon wished it had that. Alexander the Great wished he had that. The Roman Republic wished they had that. I mean, you name any empire in history, and that is 900 military bases in 130 countries, okay? So, yeah, let's stop being an empire. Let's bring these guys and gals home, and let's maybe start talking about peace, because I ain't hearing a whole lot of that coming out of D.C., and I don't care who's in the White House. So, I'm going to change gears. It's going to be hard to do it, folks, because honestly, I could sit here and monologue for a good hour about the history you don't know about concerning our veterans and how they're being screwed up one side and down the other. Mo, okay, one more. Here's another one for you, son. I worked with a brother at the VA. His name was Mo. Mo Brown. Mm-hmm. You remember Mo, right?
Yeah.
Good guy, great guy. He was in the Vietnam War, okay? There he was later on in life trying, you know, suffering from, you know, things that he suffered in Vietnam. And he goes to the VA to say, look, man, I need help. They ain't got no record of it. My man was in Vietnam. Okay, now the funny part of this story is he got out of Vietnam unscathed, notwithstanding what he endured from Agent Orange. You know, the thing that they knew since 1953 would, you know, kill people, that they were dumping on our troops. Yeah. Monsanto knew since 53 that would what it would do to our soldiers over there, but they sprayed it anyway. Okay. So anyway, Mo's over there getting sprayed with, you know, he goes to Vietnam, comes back, gets shot at home in Kansas. He gets shot in Leavenworth, Kansas. Didn't got out of Vietnam without a scratch, got shot in the gut in Kansas, and made it through that. So here it is, you know, goes and he does that on leave or whatever, goes back to Vietnam, and they got no record of it. So here he was fighting with the VA for I don't know how long to try to get treatment, but they don't have any record of him actually being in Vietnam. Pictures of the man in Vietnam in uniform. And folks, if you think this is a one-off, no, this is how it goes. Soldiers are screwed up all the way, in a big kind of way, and they got to sit here and fight for benefits. They shouldn't even have to, first of all, they shouldn't have been there to begin with, but now they got to fight for benefits they should already have. All right, Redemption Shield, y'all, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Yeah, I'm G'd up from the feet up every time I do this podcast, and that means grounded, so you know where to get one. Redemption Shield, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Wave Watch, yeah, when I met with the engineers over there, the one of the lady engineers that was there, she's like, she told your mom, hey, you need to take that watch off. And she thought it was a Apple watch. I'm like, no, hold up. This is a Wave watch. This thing's like hitting us up with some self-edgeo tones. And she was like, she backed up a little bit. Anyway, Billy 100 will get you $100 off that Wave Watch. And folks, believe me, every single time I leave this house, believe me, I got that Wave Watch on, because that's honestly one of the peaceful modalities I use to keep from going upside somebody's head. Every time some little limber dick marchy wants to come up to me and talk some stuff, that's the only thing keeping me from putting somebody through a 5-minute flurry of fists, man. I kid you not.
Why is it Art limber?
March. Wait, man, I can't believe I just said that out loud, but okay. Hey, oh, well, it's out there now. Hey, there you go. Hey, this is why. Hey, so we don't use any editing and stuff like that. So, folks, you get it as if it were live radio. Okay, so we don't have any sensors. We don't have a 3-minute delay, a 3-second delay, none of that stuff. So, hey, when it comes out, you got to deal with it. So, anyway, Harvest Right, May 31st is going to be the last day of their sale. So, yeah, we got a link down below if you want one of those. All right, so we're going to go into the, well, I was going to go into the good news section, but I think I'm going to over, we're going to go past that, because honestly, my good news was probably going to be bad news, and then I'm probably going to have Eric reaching out to me again saying, hey, bro, it's supposed to be the good news section, because I got stuff on here about FDA, treatment of all... Folks, it's going to open up some more it's going to open up more cans of worms that I just shouldn't open up. All right, with that said, we're going to go to my man Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your Pimp Cast tip of the day. Today's tip: more sizzle than steak. In permaculture, as in life, you will encounter people who talk a good game but don't show up when it's time to work. It's not all their fault. Most people new to permaculture are high on inspiration and naive on reality. Yes, permaculture can solve all our problems, but the system isn't interested. So when all the doors and funding don't instantly open, these people don't have the perseverance to keep going. We also don't need to waste our time trying to convince people. As Jeff Lawton says, don't go bloodying your knuckles on doors that won't open. In addition to the fine art of volunteer management, when you are creating a community project, you will constantly be accosted by the you oughtas and the we shoulds. The backseat drivers and keyboard warriors that always know best but never do anything, and the false supporting people that want to swoop in at the finish line to get the credit or try and turn the project into their vanity exercise. Building an action-based community group or network is a lot of separating the wheat from the chaff. As Bill Mollison said, the first thing you need to do is get rid of the you oughtas and the we shoulds. You want people to take action independently and to support them as best as you can. So you want people to say, hey, I want to do this. What do you think? Or I really want to help. What can I do? You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. If you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for those in the Sacramento area, check out my permaculture community group, permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there, boy. He said a mouthful. And folks, there's some stuff going on behind the scenes regarding the very thing Eric's talking about, you know, where he's talking about where you do all the heavy lifting and then some grifters think they're going to roll in and then put their name on what it is you did. Yeah, I'm going to leave that one in the tank right now, because it's actually unfolding right now, or at least somebody thinks it's about to unfold, but it ain't, because I ain't no dummy. But anyway, yeah, Eric's absolutely right. The you orders or we should. Those are the ones that drive me craziest the most. It's not like, hey, I'm going to do this. I remember like years ago, I've always been mixed up in some kind of controversy in my union when I was still there. And I put in this bylaws change to basically put more money in our pocket, because the union dues, whether anybody likes it or not, is basically a self-imposed tax. So when I saw where all the bodies were buried, so to speak, I put in a bylaws change to lower our assessments. Because like I said, a dues is a self-imposed tax. So I was like, okay, we were paying 6%. Let's drop it down to 3. Well, the membership voted and they put out a fear campaign or whatever. And, you know, people voted it down. And then sure enough, although you should put this back in again, you should do, I'm like, well, why can't you put it in? Well, if I had a nickel for all the people that like, you won't put your You won't put your junk in a bear trap, but you want me to put mine in there? Yeah, so go ahead and knock yourself out. And then also, like Eric's saying, you know, there's some folks coming out of the woodwork regarding this project we're doing out there. And, you know, if they think they're going to, if they, I don't know the full intent of it, but if anybody thinks they're going to swoop in there and claim that they've done this, they're going to have another thing coming. And honestly, I already got the bail money put back, so I ain't got no problem putting my hands on somebody at this point. I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious. I'm done being screwed. So if anybody, I know people are going to say, well, you shouldn't talk like that. Well, you know what? Some language, there's people out there that the only language they understand is when I go Old Testament on somebody.
People forget, like, violence is an option. Like, it 100% is an option. Like,
well,
the first 33 books of scripture talk about violence being a freaking option. Like, it's not the first option. It's not the first route to go, but it's definitely an option.
Well, if somebody comes in and steals my property, I'm not asking permission. Or if you steal the credit for it, and I'm not looking to get credit, but I'll be doggone if somebody who hasn't put their hands on it takes it. I don't care who gets the credit at the end of the day. I just want the job done. But yeah, Eric said a whole lot there, and maybe in the coming days I'll talk more about it. But yeah, as we're heading to the finish line over here, like I said, folks are coming out of the woodwork, and I can't believe how many, actually. But ain't going to happen. And like I said, I got no problem at all throwing somebody through a five-minute flurry of fists at this point, because I think a lot of this stuff persists. I think it goes on. It's like the, it's like that kid who's been allowed to run his mouth his whole life. He winds up on a construction job, and Steve, you know I'm right. Okay, so, and William, you know I'm right too. There'll be some kid that was allowed to just run his mouth his whole life growing up. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen it in the construction world. He finds himself in, let's say, the electric trade, the carpentry trade, in any trade out there. Now he's out there with a bunch of alpha guys, and it's dog eat dog. I mean, I'm not saying these guys are salt of the earth kind of people, but they're old salty dudes. You start running your mouth at these guys, and they don't care about. I mean, half these guys that I work with, especially in these big jobs, they're on the run anyway. They don't think twice. I mean, more than once, there'll be a guy laid out on the floor, hard hat. I mean, he's out cold. You walk up on him and you find out what happened. I have no idea. And then you come to find out he ran his mouth at some old timer. And this old timer is not his buddy that he was able to talk all this crap through in high school. Next thing you know, he puts his hands on him and they're like, okay, well, you're fired. He's like, well, I was looking for a job when I found this one anyway. So honestly, I think that doesn't happen, because honestly, you get dealt with. I mean, it's one thing if you're joking around or whatever to a point, but a lot of these kids, they're being raised now and they're just allowed to say whatever they've been saying it online. They get out there and start running their mouth to some dude that has absolutely no compunctions about making sure that the next time that person goes to the bathroom, that then little chiclets they see in the bottom of that toilet are their teeth. They have no problem doing that. And like I said, maybe we need to bring some of that back. So, you know, when everybody walked around armed back in the cowboy days, everybody seemed to be pretty polite. At least that's my understanding, at least to a certain point. All right, y'all, EMP Shield $50 off with promo code PERMA. Look, almost been in this trade for 30 years, y'all, doing electric work. And, you know, there's a lot of shady stuff on the market out there. And as always, there's not an advertiser on this program that's ever reached out to me. It's because they have a good product. I reach out to them because I know it works. And when you have a guarantee that covers me for $25,000, if something gets Kentucky Fried downstream in my home, yeah, you're somebody I'm going to reach out to. So that's why I reached out to EMP Shield. $50 off with promo code PERMA. So go check them out. You're going to be glad you did. They also make them for your vehicles and stuff like that. So obviously, hopefully the people in this audience, you got enough sense. If the worst should happen, that, you know, you're not going to the club, you're going to the house. So, all right. So I wanted to cover this one because right now is that time of year where nearly everybody doing homestead work or farm work or whatever the work, man, you're really feeling it right now. I know you are. Everybody does. And because we live, because it's not like you live in a neighborhood and you talk to your neighbors every day. When you do this work, you're usually, a lot of times you're on acreage. You could be very well in a community environment, you know, where you have a neighborhood and stuff like that. But these days, nobody ever talks to their neighbors around there. And if you do, chances are they're not doing what you're doing. So everybody feels as if they're isolated to a certain degree, but you also feel as if you're worn out. That's why I wanted to call this Burnout to Bounty, the Homesteader's Cure. So I want to talk to you about some of this burnout that's almost certainly happening right now because, and let's be honest, look, y'all, there's a lot of you out there, and I'm not talking with forked tongue here. I used to work a full-time job and be a full-time farmer. Same with William, same with Michelle. I mean, that's what it took to get to the next level of where, because doing the work, even though it paid well, at the end of the day, it's not where my passion was at. You know, I'm out there doing electric work, talking to all my tool buddies about permaculture. So where do you think my life ought to be? You know, I'm doing permaculture on the job. Where do you think my life should be? Yeah. So when you're doing this work, it's a thankless job a lot of times until you get to harvest. And nobody's really thinking about, oh man, all these days in between here and there, you know, until you get there. And then when you get to harvest, okay, that's when your sleepless nights happen. William's talked about it extensively on here. So folks, at the end of the day, you know what? Right off the bat, this ain't Instagram. This ain't YouTube. Okay, it's YouTube, but you know what I mean. We ain't pretending to do this. The people that are most consequential in this space don't have YouTube channels. A lot of YouTubers, and like I said, there was those folks a while back saying they spend time doing YouTube content. If you'll notice, I haven't done any YouTube content as of late. Why? Well, let's not forget about the fact that I just got out of time out for a week. So there's number one. But number two is I am so flipping busy from the time I wake up until the time I go to bed. I don't have time to edit a video. I am a farmer first. And if it means I don't put out content, then that's what happens. I mean, I just can't, believe me, I love conveying this information. I do. But at the end of the day, I feed myself this way. So when I say homesteading ain't Instagram, I mean it. I mean, behind every lush garden and fresh basket of eggs, you know, on Instagram, you know, okay, what they don't tell you is that there's somebody that's bone tired, under-resourced, hurting, working because, you know, for the love of it. They don't tell you that part of it. But I'm telling you right now, Sam, what do you got to add to that?
Yeah. Instagram has probably been the worst thing for homesteading, because there are straight up Instagram pages that have a homestead just to take pretty pictures. They're not highly functional, and a lot of them are, and I'm saying Instagram, but I mean most social media. YouTube being a big one, and y'all already know about my opinions on some of the YouTube creators, but again, violence is an option. We can get some stuff funded that way too. But like, I actually just recorded a video talking about this today, like 5 reasons homesteads fail. And one of the reasons being unrealistic expectations. They're seeing somebody's like 5 years in results and comparing it to like, oh, I'm going to have this as soon as I start homesteading and stuff. They're not seeing like the amount of time, effort, and money that it took to get to that point, and the education involved as well. It's like they're only on Instagram, they're only recording the very best moments. They're not showing you the times where like you're in a rush and 3 chickens got out and you got to hurry up and get those chickens in, or 9:30 at night, you get a call from the neighbor saying, hey, one of your pigs are out. So you have to go take care of that in the dark in a thunderstorm like I did last night. Like that's what it doesn't show you. It doesn't show you those things. Or they're like, everything's going smoothly. And then all of a sudden your main, you know, mode of transportation breaks down. You know, it doesn't account for these things. Like you have to really want to do this in order to stick to this. Or have a very good plan in place.
Yeah, you know, burnout comes, you know, the next one I got here is burnout comes a lot of times from doing everything alone. Sometimes you don't have a choice. I mean, and, you know, permaculture is about systems and communities, if you can possibly swing it. You know, it's not about martyrdom, even though, you know, Some would probably say that I fall into that category. And folks, I'm giving you advice that I need to take myself a lot of times, because I have more than I can possibly do right now. But I know there's a whole lot of others out there dealing with the, just like Mountainside with Ken and Amy said, you got to have strong whys. If at the end of the day, if you don't have that, I've often taught, you know, whenever I teach logic, I teach, as you should do it, grammar, logic, and rhetoric is who, what, where, when, why, and how, and you should do it in that order. But in this case, you really need to start with a why you're doing it. Because if at the end of the day, I mean, if you think you're going to go out there and get a YouTube channel, you're going to be off and running, believe it or not, there's a lot of folks that do that. You know, some people get paid doing YouTube. I ain't one of them. I mean, with the stuff I put out there, and strangely enough, I got more subscribers when I was in timeout than I did when I was actually posting videos. So maybe that's a strategy. Who knew? But anyway, yeah, it's asking for help is not weakness. I mean, it's design. It really is. So I'm bad at that a lot of times. You know, Ben Denise often asks, hey, can we help? And then honestly, the times I need the help are like spur of the moment things. I mean, it's not something that I planned out. It's like something that happened right there on the spot. And I'm always reluctant to ask if there is any possible way. Even I was this way even when I still had my tools on. I would never ask for help unless I really, really, really needed it. But yeah, it comes out from doing everything alone a lot of times. And let's be honest here. You can't pour from an empty rain barrel. I mean, your soil needs rest. Now, okay, everybody that knows me is going to be saying, well, dude, you're talking at your forked tongue right here. Yeah, I know that. So I'm talking to myself when I say this. You know what? The soil needs rest. So do you. You know, it was William would tell you, son, why don't you remind everybody what you had to tell me one time?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Sabbath was made for man. That says it up right there. But like what I told you before was like even God rested on the seventh day. Like the creator of everything rested and set an example for us. We are to rest on the seventh day, which would be like Saturday. You're supposed to rest on Sabbath. It's made for man. It's not made for God.
Folks, I would work 7 days a week, 12, 14 hours a day. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this ain't what looks like work to other people is fun to me. And so I was like, okay, well, and the first time I made myself stop, it was like, I think trying to break an addiction or something, because the first day I was like, what? I don't know how to just sit. I don't know how to just sit here, man. I don't know how to do this. And it took, now I lean into it when I make myself take that Saturday off. I do. So, I mean, when Friday rolls around, in fact, I'm like, okay, I'm going to allow myself to eat some ice cream too. So, I mean, there's other things. For me, I don't know that I ever fully rest, and I'm not going to sit in front of the TV or something like that. So I do what I call active rest. Like if there's something I wanted to know about, that's usually, I'm like, okay, cool, man. Here's a good day for me to find out exactly what happened in World War I, because I'm like, okay, research on certain topics. That's fun to me. Maybe it isn't for everybody else. Or, hey, you know what? Let me find out a little bit more. You know what? This is what they told me about Stonewall Jackson. I wonder if it's true. I'm going to find out today. You know what I mean? I don't know. I know I'm a weirdo in that regard, but that's what I do for fun. You know, other people may go to a movie or whatever, and I like those things. There ain't no theaters anywhere around here. And honestly, I'm not about to go in there. Honestly, Ben from Renewed Homestead makes the best popcorn I ever had in my life. So,
Wow.
I mean, it's the best, but I don't know what he must put his foot in there or something. I don't know, but it's the best popcorn I ever had in my life. So it's kind of hard to go to a movie theater and eat that garbage with the fake butter on it. Dude, they rolled over here with ghee and popcorn and the popcorn maker. I got one over there.
And salt.
Yeah. And all of it. Yeah, man. Messed me up in a great way. Son, anything you want to add to that? So the topic there is you can't pour. I mean, if you're wiped out, man, it's kind of hard to keep working at it.
Yeah, and you're like, what is the point of you growing your food? What's the point? Is it to feed yourself? If so, if you're killing yourself in the process, then it's like a zero-sum game. Like, you're not gaining anything. You have to look at the calories you're putting in and seeing if you're getting a return on those same calories. It's, I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of different reasons why homesteads fail, and burnout is one of the main reasons. And the reason that they're getting burned out is like doing too many things all at once, not starting small and starting slow, not coming up with a plan for the day. Like, just on a day-to-day basis, that's one thing that I noticed. And guys, I visit all kinds of homesteads and all kinds of farms. Like, I've seen the same patterns over and over again and why different homesteads and farms fail. Like, if you don't have a plan for your day-to-day, if you don't have a large-scale plan, like a five-year plan, and then a plan for your day-to-day, then you're going to spend a whole lot of time in every direction going fast but getting nowhere. You're going to, there's going to be a lot of wasted energy. Like, if I don't have this notebook with me every day, it's covered in mud because I literally bring it everywhere, then I'll have a lot of wasted time throughout the day, and I don't have time to waste. I have a young baby. I'm on the road a lot. I have a young baby. I'm trying to grow as much food as I can while still being on the road. I go out of town to teach at festivals. Yeah, I don't have time to waste, so I have to write everything down. Usually the night before, but sometimes, most of the time, usually the night before, but sometimes the morning of, because I'm just not sure how the day is going to lay out and everything. So,
yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because I do the exact same thing. I make a power list, five essential tasks that I have got to do that day. And then I have an overflow list. So if I can get through those five, then I can hit my overflow. And then if I don't get to the overflow, that became the list for the next day. You can create your own little pattern. That was something we got from Andy Frisella, and it works well. But to that point, here's the next one I got here. Overwhelm, a lot of times, and you kind of hit on this, is a sign of poor design, not poor character. It's a sign of poor design a lot of times. So if you're drowning in tasks, you might want to think about time to assess your zones, your energy flows, how you're stacking the functions. It's not just try harder, man. I mean, it's got to, and just like you said, I mean, you're going fast and doing nothing. But yeah, overwhelm is a lot of times a sign of very poor design. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, poor design or too many things all at once. Like, the way I do my order of operations for consultations is that you learn off the previous skill. Like, you're building off the previous skill. And I'll end most of those points with, like, do not move on to the next step until you're comfortable with the workload of this step and you've learned this specific system. Like, whenever I tell people to do the chicken tractor on steroids, I tell them, learn how to make compost separately. Learn how to raise chickens separately. And then you combine those, and you only combine them once you're comfortable with raising chickens by themselves. And once you're comfortable with making, at least have some sort of working knowledge of making compost by itself. And then you do the chicken tractor on steroids, and you don't introduce any new food systems until you are comfortable with the chicken tractor on steroids. And another thing that I have written down is no community or support. And you kind of hit on this earlier when you were saying, like, talking about asking for help, but this was a big one that stuck out during like Hurricane Helene and doing the disaster relief there. Had there not been any sense of community or support from neighbors or family or anything like that, a whole lot more people would have died and would have continued to suffer. Like, not saying people aren't suffering still, but they would suffer for a longer time. Like, the only reason there's been any kind of improvements out there and any kind of like aid or building or rebuilding or anything like that is because there was a strong sense of community in a lot of those hollers. Now, you can look at some of the rural areas in North Carolina and notice, like, wow, yeah, they're getting stuff done. They're getting stuff built. It looks like a community again. And then you go to the city of Asheville and it looks exactly the same because they don't have a sense of community.
Exactly. Next one I got here, Nature doesn't burn out. It cycles. And I'm talking to me again, but I know I'm talking to a lot of you out there as well. You know, you have winter dormancy, okay, compost, all reminders that, you know, we need to rest. I mean, rest isn't failure. It's regeneration, really, when you get down to brass tacks. And I remember this is also something Eric had to constantly beat into my head. He's like, you know what, dude? That second ethic, it starts with yourself. Earth care, people care, and abundance given to the previous two. Those are the ethics of permaculture. And then he had to remind me back when I was out there chasing that brass ring years ago, He's like, dude, you know, people care starts with yourself, man. He said, dude, how long do you think you can work 7 days a week and not burn out? And my argument was, well, dude, I got to get this money so I can get this farm built. You know, and I messed myself in a bad way for a long time because I did that. But also, like I said, folks, I know there's a number of you out there. I'm talking to me. Look, this isn't getting on my soapbox here, y'all. All these, not all of these, but a fair number of these, I'm talking to me when I'm saying that. So yeah, nature, it cycles. So maybe we should too. I can't remember. A lot of folks take off winter. I mean, Joel is big on that. And I've just never been able to get myself to do it. But he also pointed out that that's why some of the most innovative ideas in farming come from out of the north. And the reason why is because their winters force them to shut down. And so they got to read. They have to do this. They have to do that. Well, I do all those things anyway. And I'm thinking, okay, but the point is, look, okay, I'm taking one day off. So get off my back.
Hey, right, real quick, so, I want to shout out Maxim Duby. He was that French foreign exchange student that got sent to this cesspool decab, Texas.
Oh, sorry, up, Max.
Man. Yeah, of Max. All the places,
bro. I don't know who. I don't know you, Max. I've heard a lot of wonderful things about you. Hope everything's going well. But man, whoever the people were in the foreign exchange student program who dropped you off in decab, Texas. I was going to say something I know I couldn't get away with on here, but I'm not. I was going to say, I understand why some of this violence unfolds, but anyway, let me start with number six. Okay. Simplify before you scale. You know, do you really need 50 cows? I mean, and a quarter acre of okra, or, you know, a half acre of beans, you know, it starts with wins, not weights. I mean, really, when you get down to brass tacks with a lot of this stuff. So make sure you have, like William said a moment ago, and I'm kind of circling back to that, but I think it's important to kind of reemphasize that so many people, they get out there, yeah, man, I applaud you. But seriously, William, explain one more time why it's not, okay, so you got a half acre garden. Okay, let's say everything worked out and you got it all. Now the harvest comes in. Now what problems do you have?
Now the rush is to put everything back before it goes bad. That's the biggest issue with doing these massive, massive gardens is that most people don't have any problem with the planting day. Most people probably don't have a problem with the maintenance, because worst case scenario, you let your garden get weedy and then you still have some sort of harvest just on a larger scale. But where people fall apart and where people get super panicked and they just quit altogether is during the harvest season. That's when people are like, oh, crap, all the stuff is ready all at the same time, and I have to get it all processed, especially something that doesn't keep well, like tomatoes, for example. Like potatoes, fairly simple. Sweet potatoes, fairly simple. Some of your root crops and stuff like that, those are all fairly simple. But tomatoes, clock starts ticking once you harvest them, and it's like you're racing against the clock to get those put away before, you know, everything goes bad. And that's what nobody thinks about. And that's where everybody fails when it comes to these large, massive gardens, especially if you've never done it before. That's why you should never start off with a massive garden. Start with a couple raised beds. Just grow what you already eat, grow what you already purchased at the store and what you already eat. Get used to growing, like starting it, maintaining it, and then harvesting and putting away that, and then expand. If you find it necessary, you might find out like, oh, I don't need to grow a whole run of zucchini. I can do like four or five plants and do all my zucchini needs for the year. Maybe I'll do like 10 plants next year and sell a couple to my neighbors. Start small. Find out what you actually need. Make sure you're not wasting any energy. And Tammy says, now you know you can freeze your tomatoes. I get it. But not everything can be frozen. Start small. Find out what it is you need. Like, okay, maybe five zucchinis didn't feed everything you needed this year, but you can increase it next year, and you're not losing out any. You can just start small, start slow, and build from there. Because if you do it the other way around, you're most likely going to quit. Here's the statistic. Like, okay, most businesses fail within their first 5 years. Most homesteads and small farms that have started from people who have no prior experience fail within their first 2 years. You can leave your business. You can walk away from your business. You can't walk away from your homestead or your farm because that's where you live.
Yeah. So here's the next one. Build resilience through redundancy, also in your life as well. I mean, you want backup systems to a lot of this stuff, folks. And you hear me talk about a lot of this stuff. I kind of weave it into the program. Folks, the parts that you don't see are the people care elements that I do throw in every single day. Every single day I work out, I'm out there doing some kind of cardio for an hour. Okay. Here's another one, you know, getting into the work of Jack Cruz. And you've heard me talk about a lot of different modalities. As I learn more, as you learn better, you do better. And that's what I'm trying to do. So every single morning, Michelle and I are out there literally watching the sun rise as best you can in these mountains. Okay. There's all kinds of wonderful benefits for doing that. Also, making sure you're going to bed at a decent time, not looking at any blue light anywhere close to going to bed. That is a big thing. Like, you know, I mean, that can, it's moved the needle in a big way in my life. Also, meditation. There are so many things. You know, I got these little straps I put on all my shoes to keep me grounded, no matter what footwear I have on. If you see these little straps, my chiropractor was asking me, he said, man, what's all this? I'm like, dude, so I'm staying grounded all the time. And of course, I wear natural fiber socks, so I'm staying grounded, even though I got regular shoes on. So it's little things like that. Spending, okay, so even if, let's say you're working a 9-to-5 job or whatever the case may be, just take, okay, let's say you get 30 minutes for lunch. Do you need all 30 minutes to eat your lunch, or can you spend 15 minutes of it meditating, deep breathing, while grounded? Because you could do all that at the same time, and it moves the needle in a big, big way while getting vitamin D all at the same time. You could do all that at the same time. Ask me how I know, because I know. I've done it. So yeah, back to these resilient systems where you're creating these redundant systems. Look, I started off this show talking about all the ways in which we're being attacked electronically. Folks, you need a detox from all that stuff. You need it in a big way. Turn off the flipping Wi-Fi at your house at night. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world in how you sleep. How many studies do you need out there? There are so many out there. Little things that you could do to change that needle in a big way. But yeah, you know, schedule joy in your life. Listen to a funny podcast. I mean, I need to do that part a little bit more. I mean, usually I'm providing my own comedy in my life, but honestly, it helps if you can outsource that sort of thing. But yeah, little things like that move the needle in a big way in terms of just kind of pulling you away, because one of the hardest things to do is when you're in the middle of a task to say, look, I just want to get it done. I just want to get it done. And before you know it, you've done this all day long. You never once took, I have to literally pull Michelle away from doing things because she'll get so focused on something. I'm like, nah, stop what you're doing. Go outside, go do this, or just take a break. Just get away from it. And I got to do that to myself as well. I'm better at policing myself on that thing. But as far as taking days of rest and stuff, I'm not the best in the world for doing that. So here's another big one. The bounty starts with boundaries. That's how I have it down there. Say no to foolish distractions. Things that don't align with where you're, look, can't walk together unless you're agreed. Okay. So overcommitments, yeah, I've been pretty bad at this. And folks, I'm talking to me on this. Sometimes you got to tell folks no, because there's something else you just have to do. I have got to have, like, whenever I go to a festival, folks, it's not that I don't like being around people. I do. Now, there's always somebody out there that, you know, may push you or whatever, people that are just unbalanced. But by and large, you'll find that I disappear a number of times throughout the day. And there's nothing more aggravating when I literally go out into the woods to go be by myself and somebody tracks me down out there, or they saw me walk out there and I'm literally praying. This one particular time, the guy walks up and says, what are you doing? I'm like, dude, you're lucky I'm on my knees right now, man. I'm like, I'm over here praying. I can hear you crunching on the leaves, walking up on me. What do you think I'm doing? I mean, come on. I mean, you got to decompress. So yeah, I got to do that because it, for me, the sensory overload of being in crowds is a little more than I can bear. It's why you don't see me at concerts. Okay. So I got to get away every once in a while because I live so isolated and I'm so used to the solitude that when I'm in crowds, I can do it in very short spurts. Now I can deal with it by walking away. It's not that I don't like folks. I just have to get away and decompress for a minute because that's, I just have to do it. Okay. And if you don't, I'll go stir crazy. Okay. Anything you got to say to that, son?
Yeah, I agree. And similar thing for me, I don't necessarily have to like decompress at the festival, but after the festival, I'm talked out. Like I have to straight up tell my wife, like, hey, you can talk to me, but I just can't respond right now. Like I need a break. I just need to, if nothing else, just stop talking for a minute and stop having to like formulate thoughts, like thoughts that need to be conveyed to other people and stuff. Like I love being able to help people like in person at festivals and everything. And I understand, you know, sometimes you came to the festival to ask like specific questions in person, or you have something you want me to look over or whatever. And I'm more than happy to help you. But after the festival, if I don't take that time to just kind of like decompress and not have to necessarily answer anything, that definitely helps out quite a bit.
You know, also consider that, you know, big pharma, big tech, big ag, they want you broken. I mean, you think about it. Rest, to a certain extent, I guess, is a revolutionary act in a burnout culture. I mean, if you stop, that ought to be on a t-shirt. I mean, it's kind of a revolutionary act in a culture that's addicted to burnout. You know, we want to try to avoid the burnout. If you're getting burned out, like Joel Salatin would say, then maybe you're not, your dream isn't big enough. If you're getting burned out, I think that's it's probably an indication of a number of things, some of which we've talked about here. And of course, it's not totally comprehensive, but you know, it's just finding ways. I don't ever feel like I need a vacation. I never, ever, ever feel that. And I haven't felt that for years because I'm doing what I love every single day. I mean, this is what I love to do. I know that doesn't apply to everybody else, but you know, there are people out there, and your mom and I were just talking about it. There's a number of, for some reason, women in particular that we know of that seem to want to live on nonstop vacation. It's like, as soon as they get back, I know one that they're planning the next vacation before they're done with the one they're on. Yeah. And it's in that case, it's an indication that the life you have, might be missing a few things. Okay. So, yeah. So folks, look, I know the burnout is real. I'm sorry this program is going so long. I shouldn't have got so sideways regarding what I said in the beginning. But really, this is important right now because a lot of folks are new to this space. And you're like, man, come on. Is it ever going to stop? Yeah, it will if you can make it. And you're going to have to be the best person to do that because honestly, I am not. This is one of the areas I wanted to do a show on this because this is an area I struggle with, but I don't struggle in the same ways as everyone else. I struggle in the way that I have to make myself stop because there is such a thing as too much of a good thing. I love what I do. I love the work I do. I love everything about it. But at the same time, you know what? All work and no play makes Jack a very dull boy, as the saying goes. So, yeah. Or makes Billy a very dull boy. Take your poison here. Yeah. Anything you want to add to this, son?
I mean, I don't want to discredit that one part that Andy Frazella talks about as far as like fighting burnout. And that's using that dark side energy of like taking all those times somebody said you couldn't do something or telling you that this particular thing would fail or you're not good at such and such or anything like that. And using that to motivate you as well. Like Andy Frazella, I was just listening to his podcast today. Even though he's highly successful, millions and millions of dollars, doesn't have to work another day in his life, he still keeps a list of that he can go back and look at anytime he's lacking motivation and being like, hey, just so using that dark side energy of all the hate you've received in your life, like, you know, whether it was warranted or not warranted, but all the negative comments you've gotten or like people saying, oh, like any school counselors and stuff giving you bad advice because they didn't think you could achieve anything or anything like that. Yeah. C presidents become, or C students become president, but F students become entrepreneurs. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. So there's a lot of wisdom in all that. Hey, Brenda, she says, yeah, I'm late. What did I miss? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we've covered it all. You're going to have to back this one up, I'm afraid. Too much to cover here. But, yeah, I totally agree with you, son. I mean, no matter where you are in that continuum, it always helps if you can find – look, there's so many of us because we're not – nobody listening to this podcast was born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And if you were, you're probably not listening to it. But the great part of it, all of this is that what they consider the American dream and what I consider, what Andy Frisella considers the American dream is not at all what I consider the American dream. For me, the American dream is waking up, no chemtrails in the sky, no electronic pollution out there, none of that stuff, waking up and spending that entire day doing what I am passionate about. And that is farming. I mean, this is what I love to do. And folks, sorry about not having videos as of late. Like I said, we were in that week-long sabbatical. I guess they made me rest. Yeah. So we got kicked off I won't go into all that again. But anyway, in that week-long sabbatical, I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll be just getting ahead of what I do here on the farm because I'm a farmer first. And, you know, podcasting and all the other stuff goes way down the list, you know? So anyway, y'all, it's hopefully a lot of this stuff was a blessing to you. It's certainly a blessing to do this show. Don't worry, I'm going to come out with more stuff. William's been knocking it out of the park lately. And so be sure, tell them where they can find you, son.
Over at the Permaculture Consultant. If you look up the Permaculture Consultant on anything, I'll pop up. My email is thepermacultureconsultant@gmail.com. If you have any specific questions, I field questions through there pretty frequently. And yeah, thanks for checking it out. I appreciate it. It takes a lot of effort to get like those videos out, but I appreciate you guys appreciating it. And yeah, it doesn't go unnoticed.
Yeah, William's telling me I got to up my game regarding some of the ways I'm doing things. And yeah, I mean, the truth of it is, look, I'm a how-to channel and I'm thinking, dude, I'm just going to put it out there. If you want to do it, knock yourself out. But honestly, I need to do better at the packaging. So I'm going to work on some of that stuff as best I can because, we are definitely up to our eyeballs with a lot of stuff going on around here. Okay, hat tip to Renewed Homestead for moderating once again tonight. Hat tip to everybody in the chat tonight. And once again, if you want to listen to the podcast version, you can check us out in all podcast platforms. Yeah, say that about 10 times. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
It's rain. We'll lose that run deep. Wisdom from Saul. Permaculture dream. Let the idea unfold. I'm grooving with the truth. Feeling nature's truth. From the smallest sprout to harmony begin in the cycle of life, for the magic's alive.